I'm very pleased to talk to you today about this working paper, the position paper that was developed by the Canadian Public Health Association. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background about the paper and how we developed it. And I'm going to conclude with some information about the recommendations. And I've brought a few copies of the position paper. It's on the side there, and toward the end I'll show you a slide so you can access it online as well. No conflict of interest to disclose. These are the working group members who developed the paper, and as you can see, we have a cross-section, if you will, from five provinces, and we also have people who come from the research community, from the practitioners, and also some knowledge exchange specialists involved in this project. Now, by way of background, there were several events that helped set the stage for doing a position paper on alcohol. Denise DePapp, one of the co-authors of the paper, and myself and Robert Mann from CAMH had a workshop in 2007, which is a full-day workshop on alcohol issues, and we had very good attendance on that workshop. And then we had a roundtable discussion in June of 2009, and that was another event that sort of was a stage toward moving toward a working paper. Samantha Couthier, who's in the audience, and Denise DePapp and I organized a session in 2010 at the CPHA annual meeting, and as you can see, there were presentations from several people who were knowledgeable of the field of alcohol issues. Now, the typical attendance at these annual conferences is about 1,000. Wouldn't that be right, Jim?
That's about 1,000.
About 1,000 people. So the 1 in 10 ratio or 1 in 12 ratio to the attendance of APHA. And we had 100 people at this session, which means that we had one out of 10 attendees come to this 1 hour, or it was a 2 hour session, I think, on this issue. And that was, I think, an important building block toward moving toward a position paper. So Denise and I proposed the idea to CPHA leadership. It was approved, and team members were invited, and then here's the steps in terms of developing the position paper. I won't go over them in detail, but basically it was peer-reviewed several times and was then reviewed by the policy committee and then finally approved and was released in 2010 and is now being disseminated quite widely in different settings in public health communities and elsewhere. And I believe it was sent to WHO and also to PAHO and elsewhere. So just a little bit by way of background, as Ashley has already indicated, alcohol is a very important leading risk factor for death and disability and disease, significant economic costs, and there's emerging evidence each year with regard to the impact on cancer. And it also contributes to health inequities, and there's many public health myths about the health benefits, how large they are, and they're often overestimated by the public. And there's not great awareness of the harms and costs, and not very a substantial full cost accounting with regard to the damage from alcohol. This is the most recent study. Only it was done in 2006 by Jürgen Riem and colleagues, but based on 2002 data. And here you can see that tobacco, of the three substances looked at, tobacco had the highest cost. Alcohol was second with 14 or almost 15 billion, and illegal drugs was third. And just to put this in context, the population of Canada, for those who don't know, is about 34 million, and I guess the population of the U.S. is 370 million? Right. So there's we're less than a tenth of the population. So I don't know what the figures are. I think Marin has done some calculation in the past of the damage from alcohol. And so it's a very large burden that is being carried in societies. Overall, the drinking trends, as has been the case in the U.S., have been going up since 1996. So there was a 13% increase since that time. About 13% exceeded the lowest drinking guidelines in 2009 survey. And 31% of the men and 21% of the women reported heavy episodic drinking at least monthly in 2009-2010. And there was a significant increase among women overall and among men aged 25-34 and 45-64. So here's some slides, and thanks to Ashley who provided them. Some slides with regard to the liters of absolute alcohol sales per adult. And for those of you who saw the presentation by Bill Kerr, I think it was by Tom Greenfield's group yesterday, a very similar pattern, if you will. The sales have been going up since about 96 in Canada, and here are the patterns from British Columbia to Ontario, sort of the western half of the country, if you will. Basically, alcohol sales have been going up since 96, and a similar pattern with regard to the Quebec and the Atlantic provinces in terms of sales. Now, this is a slide that Tim Stockwell from BC has provided. It shows basically what's been happening with their estimated with regard to tobacco versus alcohol attributable hospitalizations. And the estimate is that in a few years, the hospitalizations in the province of British Columbia from alcohol will surpass those from tobacco. And there's many reasons for that, but one of them appears to be that alcohol continues to be, risky levels of alcohol are continuing to increase, and the overall sales of alcohol has been increasing for a number of years. So there are some contrasting trends. So one of the things that we indicate in the position paper that there's some contrasting trends, as I've highlighted, there's an increasing access to alcohol and some of the bullet points about that. And also there's high exposure to advertising. I suspect that what happened around in the mid-90s or early 90s, as the alcohol sales were going down, there was an increasing push with regard to intensify the advertising of alcohol. And this likely may have contributed to the change in the direction of alcohol sales. And then in contrast, my last point here, the international and national provincial initiatives, as has been indicated by Ashley, the WHO Global Status on Alcohol Report. PAHO has had a position on alcohol issues, and there's been a Canadian strategy in 2003 on alcohol issues, and several provinces have some alcohol strategies as well. So you have this interesting contrast between the increase in access to alcohol, increased marketing, and some initiatives to try to curtail the damage from alcohol. I'm doing time, okay?
You're fine.
Okay. So, turning to the recommendations. Now, for those of you who are experts in alcohol recommendations, none of these will come as a surprise. I'm just going to be preaching to the choir here. But we basically have provided two sets of recommendations. One was population-based recommendations interventions. And we all felt that if you don't do any of these, the intervention is incomplete and inadequate. You have to have population-level interventions. If you only have focused interventions, you're missing the boat. The focused interventions are very important, but they're not sufficient. And so we had four population-level interventions that I'm just going to summarize very quickly here. So they're alcohol pricing policies, and you can see them here. One is adjusting federal excise tax to CPI, revised provincial territorial taxes, strengthen minimum reference pricing on alcohol, ensure that the prices of U-brews are consistent with minimum price. U-brews, as you may all know, these are sort of a self-brew system where you can go to a shop, you can say, I want you to make so many bottles of wine for me, and you do a little part in it, or you have so many bottles of beer, but the actual price per unit is probably about a third of what you would pay at the beer store for these products. I don't think they're very good, but oh well. And you also implement a provincial surtax on alcohol beverages disproportionately consumed by youth. We also had some recommendations with regard to physical and legal availability, to have a moratorium on retail sales or a moratorium on increasing the hours of sales until a review was completed. Do not permit sales in corner stores, or do not expand the network of currently permitted. So many of provinces allow sales in corner stores, not all of them. Ontario being an exception, and a few other provinces. And maintains a legal age of 18. Most provinces are 19, pardon me, and three, Manitoba, Alberta, and Quebec have the legal age of 18. And ensure compliance with legal age with valid ID. Curtailing alcohol marketing, increasing restrict alcohol advertising, promotion, and sponsorship incrementally with an aim to have a system similar to tobacco control. So our recommendation was you need to do these changes incrementally, but move in the direction of tobacco control with your tobacco marketing. Regulate all forms of marketing, including internet, social media, and product placement. Explore legal options for provincial and territorial restrictions on advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. So we felt there were many sort of things that could be done in that area as well. Now, I should say, for those who do not know, the system in Canada is that almost all provinces, with the exception of Alberta, have government liquor stores. In some provinces, almost all of the outlets are government. In other provinces, you have, like Ontario, you have a mixture of systems. And in British Columbia, there's been an increase in private system over a number of years. And so we are basically saying that to try to maintain the present system of government control on sale of alcoholic beverages and to support liquor authorities to balance financial incentives with public health and safety considerations. Over the last few decades, I would say that the public health and safety considerations probably have been eroded. And we were trying to draw attention to that erosion and hopefully have that not continue. Now, we also felt it was important as a complementary to these very important population-based broad interventions to also have some targeted policies and interventions. And again, you'll not be surprised by these. Countering drinking and driving, changing the drinking context, education and promotion behavior change, increasing access to screening and brief interventions. And we had five recommendations under drinking and driving, increasing the length of administration sanctions for drivers with BAC between 5.0. So this is sort of roadside, when you stop somebody on the roadside and they have at this level to increase those sanctions. Strengthen sentences for repeat offenders, increase sobriety checkpoints, and strengthen graduated licensing for novice drivers, and provide offender pay alcohol ignition interlock for those convicted of drinking and driving. We also had several recommendations with regard to changing the drinking context, adapt risk-based licensing for a licensed establishment. That basically means that if I'm managing an establishment and I've had several convictions offenses with regard to serving to minors or serving to intoxicated, that the next year my fee would go up substantially, and so on and so forth, so that there would be some penalty, long-term consequences for continuing to break the regulations or the Liquor License Act. Have greater capacity to enforce liquor regulations, so that means more inspectors, more randomized inspections, more intensive inspection of the liquor establishments. Implement evidence-based bar safety and responsible training programs. Many of the programs, Smart Serve. Many of these programs have not been evaluated. They may be excellent. They may be brilliant. But if they don't evaluate them, it'd be very difficult to determine how effective they are in terms of doing what they're supposed to do. Enforce enhanced training of owners, managers, and staff as the condition for licensing renewal. We also had several recommendations about promoting behavioral change through education. And I'm very cynical, quite frankly, about some of the education programs, especially school-based programs. I think in many cases they're a great waste of money, of talent and time. But I think that some of them have been evaluated and they have been shown to have some impact. And I think the focus should be on those that have been shown to have some impact. And also to fund social marketing campaigns to denormalize the acceptability of harmful alcohol use. And also explore about adding health warning labels and information on new low-risk drinking guidelines in combination with other marketing and population-based interventions. And last but not least, we thought it was very important to provide necessary services for those people who drink at high-risk levels. They need to have easy access to the right services and to increase the capacity for screening, brief intervention, and referral in primary care and health and ER settings, to enhance the capacity of screening and counseling for women of childbearing age and pregnant women, and to ensure adequate capacity for community-based and inpatient treatment for both harmful drinking and alcohol addiction. So these four focused interventions we see as a very important complement to the four population-level interventions that I mentioned a few minutes ago. The position paper also talked about two cross-cutting areas. One was surveillance and research, and I won't read these bullet points, but I think we thought it was very important to have some way of monitoring what are the changes in access, what are the changes in consumption, what has been the harm from alcohol and the costs, and to increase support for knowledge exchange activities in order to implement evidence-based strategies. And finally, to create a community of practice to support knowledge exchange and to create learning opportunities for alcohol control and prevention policies. With regard to these last points, I think one of the really big gaps is there is not enough capacity for people to do alcohol policy. The people who are in the public health communities there's not enough training for them. There's not enough training in medical schools. There's not enough training in the nursing programs. There's not enough training in the social work programs. There just is not the capacity. There may be the intention to do it, but they need to be trained. There needs to be training how to do it and how to network and how to build that capacity. So here is the website for the position paper. If you can't write this down, it's basically go to www.cpha.ca and you go to position papers and I think they're in alphabetical order and you'll see the alcohol position paper in that list. And I think that's it. Thank you for your attention. Thank you very much.